Welcome to The Drip, brought to you by GlideTech. Today we're looking at the data behind the 2026 CMS mandate for severe hyperglycemia and hypoglycemia ECQMs.
And, you know, this is such a massive shift in the regulatory landscape.
It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it like driving down a highway blindfolded. If you drift too far to the left or too far to the right, you aren't just going to scratch a bumper.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to cause a massive life-threatening crash.
Exactly. And the resulting financial liability from that crash is going to fall entirely on your shoulders.
Right. And that is essentially what the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, is telling hospitals about inpatient blood sugar management right now.
It's a profound wake-up call. We are doing a deep dive today into the August 2024 CMS final rule. Specifically, we're unpacking the IPPS, or the Inpatient Prospective Payment System rule.
Which, for anyone listening, is the framework that dictates how hospitals actually get paid by Medicare.
Right, exactly. And for the last few years, hospitals could choose to track, you know, none, one or both of these severe glycemic measures. It was totally elective.
But starting January 5, 2026, the era of optional transparency is officially over.
It is over. So whether you are a CFO managing the bottom line, a CMO focusing on clinical variation, or a nursing leader managing frontline workload, this mandate changes how your hospital operates.
Completely. The stakes here are basically binary at this point. On one hand, you have critical patient safety and the threat of massive payment penalties looming.
Yeah, and on the other hand, the proactive hospitals are looking at a potential 6 to 8 times return on investment.
Which is wild. But the clock is ticking, right? The measurement period begins calendar year 2026, and that impacts the fiscal year 2028 payment determination.
So before we get into all the operational timelines and that financial ROI, I think we need to look at the clinical baseline. Like, why is CMS suddenly making this a priority?
Right. Let's establish that. Why now?
Well, it really comes down to the sheer scope of the problem. If you look at the general American population, about 1 in 10 people have diabetes. But the moment you look at hospital admission...
And numbers jump, right.
Oh, drastically. Up to 1 in 3 hospitalized patients have diabetes.
Wait, 1 in 3? I mean, why such a massive jump from the general population to the hospital population?
It's the environment, basically. It's the nature of acute illness. When a patient is hospitalized, their body is under severe physiological stress.
Like from a surgery or something.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe a severe infection, a trauma, major surgery. That stress triggers the release of hormones like cortisol and adrenaline, which naturally drive blood sugar up.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
Right. And then you add in the fact that many patients are put on heavy steroids for treatment, their diets are constantly changing, or they're suddenly fasting for procedures.
Right. The MPO status.
Exactly. So you have this perfect storm for stress-induced hyperglycemia, even in patients who have never been diagnosed with diabetes before.
That paints a much clearer picture. The hospital environment itself is essentially a catalyst for chaotic blood sugar levels.
It really is. And, you know, it gets more intense when you look at how we try to treat it. The data shows almost 40% of patients in the hospital meet the clinical indications for insulin.
40%. That is a huge portion of the patient population.
And the American Diabetes Association, the ADA, has very clear guidelines stating that insulin is the cornerstone of treatment for hospital hyperglycemia.
But I'm guessing hospitals aren't exactly following those guidelines perfectly.
Not even close, unfortunately. Despite those clear guidelines, IV insulin for critically ill patients is heavily underutilized. And subcutaneous management, you know, the standard shots given outside the ICU, often fails completely to reflect current ADA standards.
Okay, so if the ADA guidelines are so clear, why is this so hard for hospitals to get right on their own? Like, what is actually breaking down at the bedside?
Well, let's ground this in the new CMS metrics to understand that.
Yeah, let's look at the specific electronic clinical quality measures, or ECQMs, that CMS is targeting.
For those unfamiliar with the term, an ECQM is just a standard that uses data extracted straight from your electronic health record to measure the quality of care.
Right.
So CMS is targeting the extremes of poor glycemic management. First, they are measuring hospital harm for severe hypoglycemia. They define this as a blood glucose level dropping under 40 milligrams per deciliter.
Under 40. That sounds dangerously low.
It is dangerously low. It's life-threatening. And second, they're looking at hospital harm for severe hyperglycemia, which is a prolonged spike over 300 milligrams per deciliter.
Okay, so under 40 and over 300. Back to our analogy, those are the rumble strips on our highway.
Exactly. And here is the really critical part. CMS is mandating the reporting of both of these measures simultaneously. They are what we call balancing measures.
So it's like if you only measure how often you hit the rumble strips on the left, the hypoglycemia, you might overcorrect and swerve into oncoming traffic on the right.
Yes, the hyperglycemia. CMS is forcing hospitals to prove they can keep patient glucose levels between the lines.
Wait, so by trying to avoid a penalty for hypoglycemia, a hospital might actually trigger a penalty for hyperglycemia. It's a total catch-22.
It really is.
Because I can see a hospital administrator getting terrified of hitting that sub-40 hypoglycemia metric, right?
Yeah.
They might just tell their staff to drastically reduce their use of insulin across the board to avoid the penalty.
Which is exactly what happens historically. Fear of causing a low blood sugar event leads to clinical inertia. Providers basically underdose insulin.
And when they do that, they trade one problem for another.
Exactly. They drive up their rates of severe hyperglycemia. Both have to be monitored together because poor management in either direction has severe cascading consequences.
We're talking about tangible patient harm here.
Huge harm. An increased risk of hospital-acquired infections, delayed wound healing, much longer lengths of stay, higher readmission rates, and ultimately increased mortality.
Which, from an executive standpoint, is incredibly costly for the hospital. But the real tragedy is that it is largely preventable.
Highly preventable.
Yeah, the source material we're analyzing today, the case studies from sites using Glytec software, shows that keeping the car between the lines isn't just a theoretical goal.
No, not at all. The clinical data from sites using Glytec's GluCommander is incredibly robust. For patients requiring IV insulin in critical care, these hospitals have seen a 90 to 99% reduction in severe hypoglycemia.
Hold on. 99%. That sounds almost too good to be true in a highly complex, unpredictable ICU environment.
I know it sounds crazy, but it's the reality of the data.
What is this software doing mechanically that a highly trained ICU nurse isn't doing on their own?
It comes down to dynamic calculation versus static protocols. Historically, nurses use a paper protocol or, you know, a digitized version of a paper protocol in the EHR.
Right, the classic if-then chart.
Exactly. It says, if blood sugar is X, give Y units of insulin. But those protocols are completely static. They don't account for how sensitive a specific patient is to insulin, and they don't look at glucose velocity.
Meaning how fast the blood sugar is currently dropping or rising.
Right. Think about it. If a patient's blood sugar is 150, a static protocol might say, go ahead and give insulin.
Okay.
But if an algorithm looks at the data and sees that the patient's blood sugar was 300 an hour ago, it recognizes a rapid downward velocity.
Oh, wow. So it sees the crash happening before it hits bottom.
Exactly. It knows the patient is crashing and will recommend stopping the insulin, whereas the static protocol would just push them right into severe hypoglycemia.
That makes total sense.
Because GluCommander is FDA-cleared clinical decision support, it dynamically adjusts the dosing based on real-time patient responses. And by the way, for non-ICU patients using subcutaneous basal bolus therapy, we still see severe hypoglycemia reductions of 50 to 70%.
That is massive. So, okay, if the clinical data is this strong and the software clearly works, why isn't every hospital in the country already running this system?
Well, because deploying an FDA-cleared algorithm-based system across an entire hospital network is a massive operational lift. You are changing the workflow of hundreds, sometimes thousands, of clinicians.
Yeah, let's unpack that, because as the strategist here, I want to break down the actual timeline required to pull that off.
Let's do it.
Because the math detailed in the Glytec Care Kit should be a massive wake-up call for executive teams.
Yeah.
If you want to be fully functional by that January 1st, 2026 deadline, you have an enormous footprint to navigate.
Oh, absolutely.
The data breaks this down into three phases. Phase one is procurement, contracting, and the sales process. The source estimates this takes anywhere from 6 to 14 months.
And, you know, that variability depends heavily on organizational complexity. You are dealing with budget approvals, comprehensive technical reviews by your IT security teams.
Which takes forever.
Always. Plus securing C-suite buy-in and then the actual legal contract execution.
Right. So up to 14 months just to get the legal and financial green light. And once the ink is dry, you enter phase two. Delivery, implementation, and integration.
Which takes another 2 to 6 months.
Right. You have to slot this project in among all the other IT initiatives your hospital is juggling. Maybe your hospital is in the middle of a massive EHR migration or a cybersecurity audit.
Yeah, IT is always backed up. Plus, you have to conduct role-based training for the clinical teams. And crucially, you have to execute the technical integrations with your electronic health record.
Right, and the data stresses that integration is non-negotiable for success.
It really is. The software has to talk seamlessly with your ADT, your admissions, discharges, and transfer system, so it knows where the patient actually is.
Makes sense.
It has to pull real-time data from your lab information systems, and it has to connect to the MAR, your medication administration record, so nurses aren't doing double data entry.
God forbid we give nurses more manual data entry.
Exactly. If any of those IT connections face delays, your go-live date gets pushed back.
Which bleeds right into the final phase. Optimization and utilization taking 1 to 3 months. This is the ramp up. You're building team proficiency and continuously monitoring performance metrics. So let's do the math on those three phases. 14 months for procurement, 6 months for implementation, 3 months for optimization.
That is potentially a 23-month process from start to finish.
23 months, which means if leadership hasn't started planning, building a committee, and budgeting for this right now, they are already severely behind the curve for that January 2026 measurement date.
They are already on the back foot, yeah.
Let me play devil's advocate here for a second, though, especially for the CMIOs and IT leaders listening to our deep dive today.
Okay, lay it on me.
When executive leadership sees a 23-month timeline and the cost of an outside vendor, their immediate instinct is going to be to look internally.
Oh, the classic, we can build it ourselves.
Exactly. Hospital IT departments build custom EHR tools and flow sheets all the time. Can an IT director just assign a few developers to build a DIY insulin calculator in-house to meet these ECQMs and save the procurement time?
It is a very common instinct, but the source data heavily dismantles the DIY approach. The fundamental flaw with a DIY insulin calculator built in an EHR is that it isn't actually a dynamic algorithm.
Right, like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, it is essentially just digitizing an old, flawed paper protocol.
So it's basically just a static spreadsheet on a screen.
That's exactly what it is. It takes a historical protocol that hasn't evolved with current evidence and just puts it on a monitor.
Got it.
It doesn't adjust when a patient's kidney function suddenly drops, which drastically changes how they process insulin. It doesn't adjust if a patient is suddenly made NPO.
So it's rigid.
Extremely. Because it lacks those dynamic adjustments, it doesn't actually address the root causes of clinical variation. In fact, the research highlights that certain DIY models have been found to be, quote, no more accurate than a coin toss.
A coin toss?
Yeah.
I mean, when you are managing a drug as potent as insulin, where a single miscalculation can plunge a patient into a coma, a coin toss is terrifying.
It's completely unacceptable from a patient safety standpoint. But even if we look past the clinical inadequacy, the operational and legal risks of a DIY build are profound.
Yeah, I really want to highlight those executive risks because they are massive. First off, regulatory risks. A DIY insulin calculator built by a hospital IT department is not FDA cleared.
Nope.
It is not clinically validated in the way a commercial medical device is. Second, you have immense malpractice exposure.
Which should keep any CFO awake at night.
Seriously, DIY tools lack clinical indications for use, they lack proven safety guidelines, and they lack contraindications. The white papers we're reviewing explicitly state that using software that isn't FDA cleared may expose hospital defendants to malpractice litigation.
And beyond the hospital liability, the physicians themselves may be held personally responsible for relying on unvalidated clinical decision support to dose their patients.
Wow. And if you're an IT director listening to this, you know exactly what happens with custom builds.
Yeah.
This brings us to the third risk, hidden IT costs.
Oh, the maintenance nightmare.
Right. A DIY tool is never a one-and-done build. It requires a heavy, continuous lift from your hospital IT staff to design, test, implement, and maintain it. What happens when the one developer who built your custom insulin flow sheet takes a job at another health system?
You're stuck.
Who updates the code when the ADA changes their medical guidelines next year?
You are left holding the bag on an unsupported medical tool. That ongoing maintenance is a massive burden. You have to conduct quality audits, navigate technical compliance, and provide professional training for every single new clinician that gets hired.
Right. You aren't just building a quick calculator. Your hospital's taking on the legal liability and operational burden of being a software manufacturer.
And DIY clinical decision support just does not have a track record for success in glycemic management. It's too complex.
Okay, so DIY is a dangerous trap. And the timeline for proper vendor integration is up to 23 months. So how do administrators actually tackle this without paralyzing their organizations? Let's synthesize this mandate into actionable steps.
The very first step, and the data is incredibly clear on this, is that clinical teams cannot do this in a silo.
You can't just mandate it from the top down.
No. You cannot just send an email to the pharmacy or the nursing staff and tell them to, quote, fix the hyperglycemia metrics. Hospitals must immediately form a dedicated glycemic committee.
Okay, who needs to be on that committee?
This committee needs executive support from the very top, and it must include nursing, pharmacy, IT, and hospitalist leadership. They need to establish clear goals based on the latest evidence and ADA guidelines.
And they need high reliability tools to actually execute those goals at the bedside. This is where the Glytec CMS reporting care kit comes into play.
Yes, exactly.
The sources detail three very practical tools within this care kit designed to accelerate the committee's work.
Let's walk through those. The first tool is the summary of CMS ruling. This is essentially an executive briefing. It is designed specifically to empower endocrinologists, hospitalists, and diabetes educators to communicate the sheer gravity of these measures to their executive teams.
It's a tool for bridging the language gap, really.
How do you mean?
Well, clinicians know how dangerous hypoglycemia is, but they sometimes struggle to translate that danger into the language of hospital administration. You know, terms like risk, compliance, and ROI. This summary does the translation for them.
That's a great point. It frames the clinical need within the new regulatory reality. The second tool is the implementation timeline we discussed earlier. It is a definitive step-by-step roadmap developed by implementation experts.
Which takes the guesswork out of project slotting for your IT department.
Right. And the third tool is the CMS checklist. I really want to drill down into this checklist because it illustrates just how incredibly complex proper glycemic management is compared to a DIY coin toss calculator.
Oh, let's get into it.
To meet the CMS requirements and actually protect your patients, a system needs highly specific features. It has to perform titration without offline calculations.
Right. Nurses shouldn't be using a pocket calculator or a separate app on their phone to figure out a high alert medication dose.
Absolutely not. The system also needs to calculate and display the exact time until the next blood glucose check, and then actually alert the nursing staff when that check is due to prevent severe lows.
And it goes far beyond just insulin and dosing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Paint a picture of what else this software has to manage.
Well, think about a patient crashing into hypoglycemia. The system needs to automatically recommend the exact treatment.
Like what kind of treatment?
Whether that is D50, which is a heavy intravenous dose of dextrose to rescue a crashing patient, or glucagon, or oral carbohydrates, it needs to calculate IV meal boluses, adjusting the insulin based on the exact carbohydrates the patient is about to eat.
Wow. The checklist also details requirements for managing DKA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Diabetic ketoacidosis, which is a highly volatile critical state.
Yes. For DKA, the software has to monitor the patient's anion gap, which is a measure of the blood's acidity.
Okay.
It tracks that gap to prevent the care team from prematurely discontinuing the IV insulin. And it has to alert the staff to switch the patient to glucose-containing fluids the moment their blood sugar drops below 250.
So they don't swing from severe high to severe lows.
Exactly. You have to thread the needle.
It even lists special algorithm considerations for pediatric use, glucose velocity guardrails, support for patients receiving nutrition through tube feedings, and seamless integration with the EHR flow sheets we mentioned earlier.
It's a lot.
Looking at the sheer mechanical depth of this checklist, you realize that managing inpatient diabetes is a hyper-complex, dynamic workflow. A static protocol never stood a chance.
Which is exactly why CMS is forcing the issue now. Making these ECQMs mandatory is CMS recognizing the entirely preventable nature of these outcomes.
Yeah.
They recognize the wild clinical variation from one hospital to the next, and they recognize that hospital executives are often completely unaware of their own facility's failure rates.
Because this specific data just hasn't been tracked comprehensively at the executive level before.
Right. It was elective, but now it isn't.
A phrase from the IPPS rule that really sticks out is that this mandate affirms CMS's commitment to, quote, saving lives from preventable harms. And I think that brings us perfectly to the ROI factor.
Yeah, let's talk about the bottom line.
Because, yes, this is about avoiding CMS payment penalties in fiscal year 2028. But proactive compliance with a highly reliable system like Glytec isn't just a defensive move. The sources highlight that hospitals position themselves to realize a 6 to 8 times return on investment.
That ROI isn't magic either. It comes from tangible, measurable operational shifts. When you reduce severe hypoglycemia by up to 99%, you are preventing catastrophic adverse drug events.
Which are massively expensive to treat.
Exactly. You are drastically reducing the length of stay because patients aren't suffering complications from their treatment. And you are avoiding costly 30-day readmissions.
And getting patients healthy and discharged discharge faster also frees up beds. It improves your overall hospital throughput, meaning you have the capacity to take on new, complex admissions.
It is the ultimate win-win scenario.
It really is. You dramatically improve the safety of your patients, you align flawlessly with the new federal mandates, and you improve the financial and operational health of the hospital.
But the window to act is actively closing.
Fast. If the measurement period begins January 1, 2026, and you are facing up to a 23-month implementation timeline, the budgeting, the IT slotting, and the committee formation has to happen right now.
Right now. And if we pull all of this data back to the core mission today, it really centers on a single vital question for any healthcare leader listening.
What's that?
CMS has explicitly stated this mandate is about saving lives from preventable harms. So if the clinical evidence proves that severe hypoglycemia can be reduced by up to 99%, and your hospital leadership chooses not to implement proven FDA-cleared clinical decision support, at what point does preventable harm become predictable harm?
Wow. That is the defining question, isn't it? At what point does preventable become predictable? You have to keep the car between the lines. It's no longer just about hitting a regulatory metric or avoiding a financial rumble strip. It's about ensuring your hospital doesn't swerve into predictable harm when the technology explicitly exists to guide your clinicians and your patients safely down the road.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining us today on The Drip, a GleanTech podcast production. For the full white papers and case studies discussed today, visit GleanTech.com.